Good morning. That was Jane Sibbery from an album called The Speckless Sky, and I believe that particular song was called The Very Large Hat. Not that her titles have too much to do with the lyrics of her songs, but I kind of queued up the wrong song, and I think that was the one that finally came out. Now, see, if I have this trouble with plain old vinyl LPs, imagine the kind of trouble I'd get into with compact discs. So we're not going to mess with those for at least another 20, 25 years, I think. Then I might be ready for them. You're listening to Heresy on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and I'm here. I hope you're here, too. I would like to thank, first of all, the wonderful people, and I'm going to thank them by name, who have sent me communiques over the last 2 weeks. Last week I got very involved communiques from Ben in New Jersey. And Ben, if you're listening, I need your address. I threw away the envelope that contained your return address. I'm so used to writers who put their name and address and phone number on every page they ever write, because you do that when you submit to magazines and to agents and publishers. So I immediately toss the envelope, and I don't happen to look to see whether or not the address is on the letter. I'm also used to writing on letterhead, which has my address on it, and for business purposes. So if Ben is listening, if you could drop me a postcard or something with your address on it, I would appreciate it. And Sanda, from wherever Sanda lives, she's a sculptress, and she wrote me a very interesting letter. And also Swami David, whose letter I'm still digesting. It's quite packed with philosophy. I think it's very exciting that there are people out there who are stimulated enough to enter into discussion with me by post. I like that a lot. And this week I came in, and what did I find but a postcard, a wonderful postcard from Ellen from Manhattan with the, and people, I've often talked about how I go through all kinds of trials and tribulations trying to find postcards that match people's personalities or that match something about a person, whether it's a time that they're going through or a book that they're reading or a person that they're seeing or something. And I will spend hours in a shop, in a postcard shop. They have these little kitschy places down in the East and West Village. And I will spend an awfully long time trying to find something that is absolutely perfect, right on target. And this card, which is a card, it's a representation of a painting called The Penitent Magdalene, showing this lovely woman looking into a mirror. The mirror is reflecting only a candle flame. She's holding a skull, a stylized skull, which Sydney Smith, who I was just speaking to, says looks a lot like our primal ancestor, Lucy. And actually, it sort of does, because it's very stylized. It doesn't have a lot of the distinct features that that characterize a real skull. And looking around on this lovely card, it's a lot of it's in shadow. It's by Georges de la Tour, a French painter, 1593 to 1652. And there is a lot of jewelry scattered about. There are pearls lying on the floor and a pearl necklace lying on the table. And I think there's like another pearl there. It's a wonderful postcard anyway. So thank you so much. And of course it jibes perfectly with what I'm doing this morning in a manner of speaking, which is I have two pieces on a phenomenon that has been around for a very, very long time, one can conceivably say since the Egyptian dynasties, which is the archetype or the occurrence of the Black Madonna. Now, I am not Catholic. I am very interested in Catholicism. I'm very interested in Judaism, and I'm very interested in Islam. I'm interested in the big three. I don't feel tied to any one religion. I can take as much fascination and interest and joy in participating in a Seder or a Mass or an Islamic Salat, some sort of prayer. I'm open, I think, to religion. I didn't get tied into anything when I was younger, although there's a part of me that always wanted to be a nun, and I think that's mainly for the romance of it, the denial, but yet joy in denial, and also living segregated with a colony of women and developing my mind in that particular atmosphere doesn't sound too shabby to me. Something that someday I might yet do. Who knows? They take converts. But this morning, I read quite a while back a very slim book that a friend of mine gave me called The Pregnant Virgin. It's by a Jungian analyst named Marion Woodman. And in this book, there is mention of many archetypes. Jung was into the collective unconscious. He was into archetypal figures and how we tie to them. And there's a lot of that coming out in relatively pop psychology today. Pop meaning that people are absorbing it rather too quickly and without a lot of background. There are books recently on goddess archetypes. There is the goddess in every woman. There is the one I have, which I can't remember the title of, but it's a very similar title, where women are shown that the reason that goddesses, the Greek and Roman goddesses specifically, were created or did exist, whatever, was to fulfill a certain need in human beings, specifically in women. And that each of the traits that women have inside them were magnified and made concrete, made whole by these goddesses. There's Hera, Athena, Venus, and a few others. There's six archetypes altogether, and I don't remember them right now. I should have probably looked all this up before I came in, but I didn't think about it until right now. That's the beauty of live radio, you see. So the concept of archetype has been bandied about in popular psychology books recently, especially with a resurgence of the supposed New Age religions and observances and lifestyles, and also it ties in a lot with feminism in a way, I think. It's not political feminism so much as spiritual feminism. But then again, we are taking a lot of our New Age philosophies from the Native Americans anyway, and they are, as a group, quite upset by this, because we seem to just be taking we're skimming the cream off the top, which is a lot of what Americans tend to do anyway. Mumble, mumble, rant, rant. Let me get into what I'm doing for the show. The Marion Woodman book, The Pregnant Virgin, has a bit of mention, well, actually a few pages, on the Black Madonna and what it means to either Marion Woodman or Carl Jung, I'm not sure. But it's an analysis of what it all means. And then The second half of the show, I have a historical article on the Black Madonna of Europe, Diffusion of the African Isis. And this is Danita Red's piece that appears in The Black Woman in Antiquity, which is edited by Ivan van Sertima, who I believe has been on this air more than once. And this talks about the actual historical transformation of a black Egyptian slash African goddess into the Christian. But let me begin with the Marion Woodman piece on the Black Madonna, and then I will talk about how it affected me, what it meant to me, and how I went out and got my own Black Madonna. This again is from Marion Woodman's book, The Pregnant Virgin. As we shall see later in this chapter, the Virgin Mother, in her human bewilderment, rather than in her deified glory as the Mother of God, is appropriately symbolized in the Black Madonna. She is the awakened positive mother who is constellated after the purging of the negative mother complex. She is the natural patron saint of the freed bondwoman, the released addict. The Black Madonna is black because she has literally or figuratively been through the fire and has emerged with an immense capacity for love and understanding. What the Virgin of the New Testament lost when the Church Fathers meeting in council decided to put her human anguish into the Apocrypha, the Black Madonna embodies. Like the addict who undergoes the humiliation of staying with the addiction in order to find the hidden gold, the Black Madonna suffered the miracle of the fire. The hidden treasure that filled her with shame and led to accusations of whoredom and adultery was nothing less than the divine child, her own spiritual identity, the I am that I am. This chapter is about the alchemical fire in which femininity in our culture is burning in order to give birth to the psychologically conscious feminine. Most of the women I have in mind came from good homes. Their parents were affluent, middle-class professionals whose collective values usually living out only the reality they have ever known. The fury can be vented in private, and behind the steering wheel of a moving car is not private. Oh, sorry, I started reading from an incomplete page. No wonder, it goes from page 100 to page 121. Sorry. The significance of what the Black Goddess symbolizes is recognized by many religions. In the ancient text, The Thunder Perfect Mind, her wisdom, encompassing, unfathomable, is revealed. For I am the first and the last. I am the honored one and the scorned one. I am the whore and the holy one. I am the wife and the virgin. I am the mother and the daughter. I am the members of my mother. I am the silence that is incomprehensible and the idea whose remembrance is frequent. I am the voice whose sound is manifold and the word whose appearance is multiple. I am the utterance of my name. In Christianity, this goddess is personified by the Black Madonna. In Montserrat, Spain, in the Middle Ages, the Benedictine monks saw their craggy mountain, lush with flowers, as an image of the Virgin herself. Referring to this shrine, Marina Warner writes, "While Mary provides a focus for the steeliest asceticism, she is also the ultimate of fertility symbols. The mountain blossoms spontaneously. So does the Mother Maid. The old significance of the moon and the serpent as divine attributes survives in such sanctuaries as Montserrat, for there she is venerated as a source of fertility and delight. The Virgin of Montserrat, presides especially over marriage and sex, pregnancy and childbirth. Like other black Madonnas, her mysterious and exotic darkness inspires a particular depth of wonderment and love. For a woman without a positive mother, this dark side of the Virgin can bring freedom, the security of freedom, because she is a natural home for the rejected child. The child born from the rejected side of the mother can bring her own rebel to rest in the outcast state of Mary. She need no longer be the poor little match girl outside the window looking in at the Holy Family on Christmas Eve. She need no longer light her solitary match in the snow while the family celebrates together around the blazing hearth. She need no longer fear dying alone when her last match goes out. The fact is, the domestic world alienates her. She is an outcast, a gypsy. There is no room for her at the inn. Saving the abandoned child within her is the woman's own version of the Virgin and the Divine Child. Her Virgin, however, is not what Marina Warner calls a focus for the steeliest asceticism, which is what her negative mother was. In stark contrast to that steeliest of mothers, her Virgin is the other side of Mary, the ultimate of fertility symbols. In loving the abandoned child within herself, a woman becomes pregnant with herself. The child her mother did not nourish, she will now nourish, not as the pure white biblical virgin who knew no Joseph, but as the dark Montserrat virgin who presides over marriage and sex, pregnancy and childbirth. The black Madonna is nature impregnated by spirit, accepting the human body as the chalice of the spirit. She is the redemption of matter, the intersection of sexuality and spirituality. She is the loving biological tie to the body, fertilities, babies. She is the right to life versus the pro-choice problem in a nutshell. Issues involving tubal ligation, abortion, the pill, put the black Madonna at the very center of our culture. Connecting to this archetypal image may result in dreams of a huge serpent, mysterious, cold-blooded, inaccessible to human feeling. Seen as an appendage of the negative mother, it is the phallus stolen from the father and used to guard inviolate purity. Yet this same snake, when seen in relation to the moon, symbolizes the dark, impersonal side of femininity and at the same time its capacity to renew itself. The daughter who can come out from under the skin of the negative mother will not perpetuate her, but redeem her. The black Madonna is the patron saint of abandoned daughters who rejoice in their outcast state and can use it to renew the world. Although not to be found in authorized versions of the Bible, the apocryphal New Testament contains much material on this dark side of the Virgin. The book of James tells how Joseph, after a long sojourn building his buildings, returned to find his 16-year-old virgin wife 6 months pregnant. He was both heartbroken and afraid. He called Mary and said unto her, O thou that wast cast for by God, why hast thou done this? Thou hast forgotten the Lord thy God. But she wept bitterly, saying, I am pure, and I know not a man. And Joseph said unto her, Whence then is that which is in thy womb? And she said, As the Lord God liveth, I know not whence it is come unto me. And Joseph was sore afraid and ceased from speaking unto her, and pondered what he should do with her. And Joseph said, If I hide her sin, I shall be found fighting against the law of the Lord. And if I manifest her unto the children of Israel, I fear lest that which is in her be the seed of an angel, and shall I be found delivering up innocent blood to the judgment of death. What then shall I do? The judgment referred to here meant being stoned to death as an adulteress. There follows a long description of the dream in which Joseph is reassured by an angel that the child in Mary's womb is of the Holy Ghost. Then he and the Virgin have to undergo humiliation and testing at the hands of the priests. As the story unfolds, Joseph takes care of Mary, but both confused and alone. And they drew near unto Bethlehem, within 3 miles. And Joseph turned himself about and saw her of a sad countenance, and said within himself, Peradventure that within her is paining her. And again Joseph turned himself about and saw her laughing, and said unto her, Mary, what aileth thee, that I see thy face at one time laughing and at another time sad? And Mary said unto Joseph, It is because I behold two people with mine eyes, the one weeping and lamenting, and the other rejoicing and exulting. The two peoples Mary sees are aspects of herself, the one weeping and lamenting at the sacrifices foreshadowed through the child within, the other rejoicing and exulting at the imminence of a new life. Death and life meet at the threshold of birth. It is this paradox of the Virgin that speaks naturally to the woman who felt rejected as a child. If she can empathize with her own pregnant mother, she may experience her gazing out of the window, dreaming of the music she no longer plays, the picture she no longer paints, the world she no longer inhabits. She may see in her mother the creative artist or crusader who was always outside society because before motherhood, she too was a virgin, receptive to the creative imagination. The mother's betrayal of her own creativity made her a bondwoman. Outcast and alone, mother and daughter both carry the potential energy represented by the Black Madonna. The woman who unexpectedly finds herself with a child in her womb is like Mary. Mary, who had been a virgin in the temple, initially responded to the angel with, Be it unto me according to thy word. During the ensuing months, however, her task was not only to accept the child, but to release herself into her own creative destiny. Similarly, a modern woman who feels trapped in motherhood must come to realize that the child is part of her destiny. I really danced naked before the mirror. Instead, I begged her impulsively, Don't get your face fixed. She just laughed. Forget you, she said. Not long after that, Robbo and I split up. I'm tired of the masculine-feminine conflict, I told him rather grandly. Yeah, well, I hope you get it together sometime, he returned. I gave the vacuum cleaner back to my parents and returned to college. Soon I was studying the usual subjects and demonstrating against the war, and I had forgotten all about it.